Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Last Call, another top executive parts Tesla, and wait till you hear his unsubtle message to Mr. Musk. Speaking of EVs, a new spark may be reviving demand. We've got some fresh data and maybe some good news you're going to want to see. Big oil's big question. With soaring profits and record production, are Biden or Trump better for American energy? The answer may be more complicated than you think. Plus, it may be Bill Ackman's most profitable move yet, and it has nothing to do with stocks. And the oddest and probably coolest story that you may see today, why the next cashier you meet could be based on the other side of the world. Trust us, you got to see this. And you will. All that and more over the hour. So belly up or buckle up in the City of Angels. Last Call is up right now. Oh, good afternoon here on the West Coast. We are live in L.A. I am Brian Sullivan. We have all that and more coming up in the hour. But first up on Last Call, investors, they're not selling in May and going away. The Dow popping to its longest win streak of the year. It is now up a lucky 7 in a row. The S&P 500 jumping above 5,200 for the first time in a month. And the NASDAQ on pace for its longest win streak in 3 months. And so, yep, with these gains, the markets are knocking on record's door. Some major stocks are coming along for the ride, too. Today, Amazon and Goldman Sachs hit new all-time highs. Costco and American Express, they're inching closer to their own records as well. And it's a similar story across the pond. It's not just us. The European stock market closed at an all-time high today, their big sort of multi-Europe index, after shrugging off some earlier losses. The question is, what is now fueling this new record run? And will you and your money see more all-time highs soon? Let's talk about it with your leadoff market panel tonight. Joining us, KKM Financial founder and CEO and CNBC contributor Jeff Kilberg, and Piper Sandler chief market technician Craig Johnson. I love it. Got West Coast, Midwest in the house, leading long and strong, just old school CNBC stock stuff. You know, Craig, how hard was it there? You've been bullish and you've been right, but it was a little sketchy there for a while. How hard was it to remain convicted?
Well, you know, Brian, we still think that for 2024, we're going to be in this sort of high level consolidation range. You know, we think at the upper end of this range, we're probably back to the old highs. But again, we think we're going to be chopping around and consolidating around, Brian, because as we look at the internals of this market, it's being driven by not only Goldman that you mentioned and some of these others, but we're seeing a pickup in staples. We're seeing a pickup in utilities. We're seeing a pickup in financials. It's kind of an interesting mix and certainly a broadening mix for the market, but yet not really the stuff that sort of dreams are made from, Brian.
Yeah, I don't know, Jeff. It felt like, to your words, April might have been a bear trap. You know, markets go down. It's all over CNBC. We got red graphics everywhere. And, you know, I think some people probably said, here it is. Here's that decline that we've been talking about. You know, 5 out of the last 2 declines that we predicted. What's your take on what happened a couple weeks ago, where we are now, and more importantly, where we may be going?
Well, Sully, there's a bit of complacency that came into the market. And ever since November, we saw the markets moving higher. And it was nearly 300 days. We had not seen a 2% drop in the S&P 500. So that conditioned a lot of investors to think that we're going to be okay. It's going to be a shell. However, there's a lot of cash on the sideline. We saw that. But what I think really moved markets, because we did see people starting to get a little doomsday-ish in April. That's been completely reversed in the last 7 trading days, like you talked about, 7 consecutive days in the Dow Jones. But what did the Fed do? Very quietly, almost in a shady manner, they came out and said, you know what, we're not going to reduce our balance sheet the way we were. We're going to slow that down. So all of a sudden now, the market was surprised. There's an extra $35 billion a month that they're rolling treasuries back in. So that was synthetically, not to get too wonky here, Silly, but that was synthetically an interest rate cut. So now they're putting money back in. The balance sheet's at $7.5 trillion. That's the safety net. Investors feel good about that. And that, in my opinion, pushes the back end of the range up here at 5,200. But I agree that we are not going to be able to sustain these. And we're going to stay range-bound until we see the chaos of the election.
I'm going to go back to you, Jeff, before I go back to Craig. What you said is important. And David Zervos of Jefferies said it on the air from Milken Conference a couple of days ago. And I want you to repeat it sort of because it's a little bit wonky to your point, but it is important. The Fed did not lower interest rates, but by reducing quantitative tightening, again, reducing the tightening, it was it not, a de facto ease on sort of that grease that really runs the market?
And it's not getting any press. And if we remember in April, when we saw interest rates move up, they were trading the 10-year about 4.45, and they jumped up to 4.7%. That was a substantial one-day move, all off of the fact that we had a failed 30-year auction, meaning there were no bidders for that government debt. That spooked the Fed a little bit. So what'd they do? Well, let's just go behind the red velvet curtain. And instead of dropping $95 billion a month off the balance sheet, let's keep it at, you know, let's call it maybe 55, 60 billion. So they capped it at 60 billion, which now is putting money back in the market. So it's liquidity. So you hit the nail on the head. They are keeping liquidity in the market for a reason. Maybe they see something that we don't.
Yeah, it's Craig. It's that sort of complicated under the hood type stuff that about seven people in the world probably truly understand. You're one of them. From an individual perspective, though, I know you like some of the semiconductors still. You're one of the best chartists out there. You like Micron. You like a ServiceNow. But I also notice you like Schwab. That's Schwab's not a semiconductor company, I don't think. What's the buy on Charles Schwab?
So Sully, we like financials. We're overweight financials. We like Goldman. We like Charles Schwab. And what we like about Charles Schwab is it's been a pretty good downtrend reversal on the charts. We're crawling back above the moving averages at this point in time, and the chart's starting to look a whole lot more constructive. These financials really got bruised up about a year and change ago, Sully, and at this point in time, they're starting to stabilize. I think that's a good sign for the overall market, but it's not really a sign for me that we're about to sort of take this gigantic new leg higher at this point in time. I agree with Jeff that we need to consolidate in here, and that has really been our thesis, sort of a strong Q1, consolidate Q2, Q3, finish higher after the election in Q4. And I think financials can certainly do well in that environment along with tech. Micron,
let's keep the love fest going here, Craig. I agree with you, and I like the Schwab pick, but I also want to put in CME Group. If I'm right, and we do see volatility in this range-bound trading environment for the next couple of months, I think CME Group is a stock that you're really going to profit from the additional trading.
Agreed,
100%. Look at this. The Chicago guy coming in with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange homer. I love it. Everybody's saluting you on Wabash Avenue. Jeff Kilmer.
Hey, I've been a member there since '97, Sully. I have to stay true to my loyalty, but I am a shareholder. I am long, full disclosure.
I love it. Jeff Kilmer, Craig Johnson. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate it. All right, there's your macro take. Let's take a look inside the market. As always, your big winner and big decliner of the day, the big winner, Equinix. It's a real estate investment trust, but they make data centers. So the stock's up 11.5 because data centers. The big loser, wow, a big loser. EPAM Systems, software company, down 27%. They slashed their full year guidance. They lost nearly a third of investor value today. Ouch. All right, we got much more to come from LA and on deck. Is cooling EV demand about to heat up? Got some new data you're going to want to see in here. Plus, another Tesla executive driving into the sunset. And maybe hear his unsubtle message as he heads out the door. That's next.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
I know you missed it, but don't worry, the RBI is back. And today we're going to give you some good news about electric cars. Yes, you heard that right. Good news around the EV market. And yes, this is me. This is not some stunt double. All right, because Carvana is out with a new report on EV sales, and there are some promising signs. First, the price premium of buying an electric versus a traditional gas-powered car is coming down. Carvana notes an average sale price of $31,000 versus $37,000 in the first quarter of last year. Nothing gets a consumer interested like lower prices. And so Carvana found that at least for its sales, remember this is just Carvana data, the percent of sales that are electric are going up. It was 4.3% last quarter. That is not a big number, we know, but it's a bigger number than the measly 1.8% of sales in the same quarter of last year. So where are these sales going and maybe to which cars? Well, Carvana helpfully gives us that info as well. Well, of course, right here in California still dominates the EV market. Hey, $6 a gallon gas will do that. There are some states that are new to the 4% threshold, meaning over 4% of sales on Carvana are electric. And they may be surprising. Florida, 5.2%. Arizona, Montana, really? Okay, I'm looking at you, Bozeman. Maryland, Texas, Virginia, Iowa, and Georgia. And I know what you're thinking. Those are probably not some of the states that you would have thought. I didn't either, but it's what Carvana found. And we found it definitely random, but interesting. Joining us now is Car Dealership Guy founder Yossi Levy. Car Dealership Guy aims to give consumers more transparency about the car market, but forget all that. Yossi, you're a must follow on X. I love your takes. I've ripped you off a few times. Always giving you credit, though, I might add. So thank you very much. You were anonymous for a long time. Good to see you in person.
I was.
You know my views. I've been critical of EVs, and I think I've been directionally correct. Is this good news or bad news disguised as good news because they're basically giving EVs away at some point?
Yeah, look, Brian, I think that this is a form of a sugar rush. What you're seeing is if you look at what new vehicles dropped the most in price over the last year, right? It's been EVs, new EVs, right? Elon started with the massive Tesla cuts about a year and a half ago, and the rest of the market followed. And so naturally, the way this industry works is new cars and used car prices, they work in unison, especially when you look at the 3 to 4 year old models. And so you're going to have an environment where you're cutting new EV prices from anywhere from 20 to 50%, right? You had some models, Tesla models, drop as much as 50% on the new side. That flows through to the used side. And so what you're seeing, in my opinion, is a sugar rush coupled with the government unleashing the used EV tax credit, which started this year. And so used car dealers are now capitalizing on that as well, which is providing roughly $4,000 to consumers in tax credit that can be right away applied to your purchase. And so all that said, I think what we're seeing is a short-term sugar rush specifically for used EVs. I do think it will continue rising, but I do think right now this specific surge is due to simply the fact that new car prices dropped so quickly and the used EV tax credit.
Yeah, well, you called this before the Carvana report, which why we wanted to have you on as well. And I know a bunch of car dealers. I talked to them, some on the record, some off. Mm-hmm. To your point and to your tweet yesterday, they don't want them on the lot. So somebody trades something in. They're either going to wholesale it almost immediately because they don't know the condition of the battery, or they're going to reduce the price so much. But I guess if I was trying to find an upside, because always try to be fair, which is that if you can get the reluctant consumer into the F-150 Lightning, for example, for $50,000 because they don't want to pay $85,000 or whatever it may be, and maybe they love it, and they sell it to their friends as well, right? Verbally, maybe that is an upside to the falling price. I don't know.
Look, I think you mentioned the Carvana report, right? Let's just start there. So 25% of Carvana's consumers that purchased a used EV in this quarter took advantage of the tax credit, right? The tax credit is extremely meaningful because it's actually it's starting to get EVs into a new generation of adopters. And so think about it, right? If you're underwater on your loan, lots of people are underwater today. There's a lot of negative equity from the last 3 years, right? You need to get into a car. You don't have a down payment. What are you going to do? Your only option, as a used car dealer friend told me the other day, is A, B, or option A, option B, or option EV. That's because you get $4,000 from the government. And so it's a very weird situation where, again, the government is subsidizing this short-term sugar rush, not on the new side. Again, the new side that's impacted this crazy reduction in prices. But if you ask me, here's what I think is going to happen, right? It looks to me like the used EVs, right now, they're the best bang for your buck. That's objectively speaking. They've dropped in price much more than hybrids or internal combustion. Over time, these manufacturers, these automakers are going to have to continue normalizing the new car prices. These new car prices are continuing to decline. And as these new car prices continue declining, I think that we're going to see ICE, internal combustion, and EVs come into a bit more of unison, and you won't have this crazy sugar rush for used EVs like we're seeing right now.
Well, I'm going to, Yossi, we're going to let you go, but I'm going to break some news on the air right now, which is that prices and for some cars, I'm looking at you, Polestar, are getting low enough that even this guy, me, might be getting interested in buying my second one. People think I hate it. Not the case. It's just got to fit the budget. Yossi Levy, thank you very much. Really great stuff. Welcome back anytime.
Brian, thanks for having me on.
All right. By the way, cool background. All right. In other car news, another Tesla executive calling it quits. After 7 years with the company, a guy named Rich Otto, now former head of product launches, said he's leaving the company. And he wrote, quote, "The recent layoffs that are rocking the company and its morale have thrown this harmony out of balance. And it's hard to see the long game. It was time for a change." Now, Otto joined several other high-ranking execs to leave Tesla since layoffs began last month. But he is the first to publicly offer a less-than-sunny glimpse into the vibe on site. Should investors, maybe you, view these curtain calls a cause for concern or just somebody writing something on their way out the door? With us tonight for more is Deepwater Asset Management Managing Partner and Tesla investor Gene Munster. I don't know what to make of this, Gene. You know, it's Tesla, so it gets more attention. Executives leave companies every day. They come, they go. Some of them are angry. Some of them are not angry. Some of them are write stuff. Some don't write stuff. Are we making too much of this because it's Tesla or because these are really high-level people all kind of at the same time? It is an issue.
Well, I think that we need to take into context that he is saying something. And when you do say something negative against Tesla, you do run the risk of their legal department outreach, which is something that you don't want. So this is a clear sign that there is morale is low, which makes a ton of sense. I mean, how can it not be low? They lost 14,000 of their coworkers. It's understandable. But in a sense, his comments, unfortunately, are overstating the obvious. This is what happens. And a month, 2 months, 3 months from now, the people that are still there will pick up the slack and continue to march forward. And so I was surprised to see the comments just because it probably doesn't pay to make comments like that on the way out. But I think that they really don't tell us much. I would add briefly that there is a dynamic related to the June quarter, which investors should be aware of, is that the street's looking for a revenue growth of 4%. I suspect that it will be a slight decline. And so we're not out of the woods yet when it comes to kind of returning to growth for Tesla.
So how big of a number would that be, G?
So it was down 9%. Revenue was down 9% in the March quarter. I mentioned where the street is at, the plus 4. I suspect it's a minus 3. And that does line up with Elon's comments that he said that on the conference call that sales in June would be a lot better. A lot better. Down 3% is a lot better than down 9%. I think some analysts have taken a little bit of a liberty thinking that this is going to be back in growth. The comps are still hard. But I do expect the company to return to nice 25% plus growth in 2025. That's what you're really owning this for. That's why I own it.
Okay, there you go. Maybe some good news there for Teslarians. I got to switch topics, Gene. According to Reuters, OpenAI, right, the big artificial intelligence company, planning to announce a Google search competitor on Monday. Google stock right now is down a touch after hours. How big of a deal do you think this is? And what, for people at home that are maybe watching, don't get it, imagine instead of, quote, Googling something, you just bring up ChatGPT and go, what's the best Tex-Mex restaurant near me? Boom. And it gives you the scrubbed reviews. I mean, this seems like a big deal for Google.
In the near term, it's an absolute big deal because I think investors are on pins and needles. We're investors in Google at Deepwater, and this is a topic that we have been navigating about the shift from regular search to generative search. So it's going to have a negative impact. But I would just remind investors, I think long term, this is basically noise around Google. Search is going to change, and Google's already changing with generative search. And they have something that OpenAI doesn't have, which is distribution. 3+ billion people use their products on a daily basis. They have infrastructure, and they've got just a behavior. And that behavior piece means that consumers are going to want to see something that's 10x better to really change how they use these products. And so OpenAI is going to announce a search product. Google stock's going to be down, but I don't think it changes the long term.
Well, I'm going to use it. I'm going to give it a shot. Literally, I'm just going to say, what's the best whatever around me? And you know, see if it's right. And that'll be the determining factor, how good it really is. Gene Munster, Deepwater. Really appreciate it, Gene. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, still ahead. Here's a question you probably didn't have on your bingo card. With record oil production and soaring oil company profits, is Biden or Trump better for American energy? Some numbers you got to see after this.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
All right, let's get out of tomorrow's news tonight. And holy smokes, another investigation into Boeing. The SEC is now reportedly looking into Boeing's statements around its safety practices. This follows the Alaska Airlines near disaster back in January. The SEC will determine whether company executives misled investors following that terrifying door blowout. Shares of Boeing relatively unchanged right now. Now to energy and the election. Among the many key issues in the presidential race, of course, will be energy. And two stories today highlight maybe some of the stakes for the industry at large. First, the Washington Post reports that former President Trump recently met with some big oil executives and asked them to help raise $1 billion for his campaign, saying that if he wins, he vowed to roll back environmental regulations from the Biden administration that some say hinder more oil production, like the recently announced rule changes up in Alaska. Next up, Financial Times asking why big oil is so sour on Biden despite largely thriving since he has taken office. And that kind of got us thinking. How have the oil stocks done under each president? Now, obviously, the oil stocks popped post-COVID, so it's hard to make a direct comparison. You got to kind of take a broader look. And if you look at a 10-year chart like that of the XLE Energy ETF, you can see that even before COVID, most oil stocks fell under Trump and have gone up under President Biden, despite his promise to, quote, phase out fossil fuels. Now, the stocks have gone up because oil prices have gone up. Now, the former President Trump wants to expand oil production, and more of something could bring prices down and maybe bring stocks down. So it actually is kind of a heck of a question. Which guy is actually better for big oil and big oil investors? Joining us now is Liberty Energy CEO Chris Wright and former North Dakota Senator, University of Chicago Institute of Politics Director, and CNBC contributor Heidi Heitkamp from the oil-rich state of North Dakota. Senator, I'll start with you. I mean, listen, President Biden wanted to do away with fossil fuels. He said it all the time before getting elected. Now we got record production, near record profits. Stocks are at or near records. I mean, did you have that on your 2024 bingo card?
Well, I actually did, because we can't survive in this country without oil. Oil drives our economy. And I think the Biden administration is afraid to talk about it because it's against the narrative of the trajectory of where he wants to have the economy. But I will tell you what's good for the oil industry. what's good for the oil industry is consistency in policy, so that they can tell their investors, look, this is long-term policy. You make your investment today, and over 5-10 years, it'll pay off. And neither side is offering that opportunity. But I'm very concerned about asking people for $1 billion and then turning around and Politico announced that the oil industry is preparing a list of executive orders for the president to sign day one. And when you look at that, is that quid pro quo? Is that pay to play? Where does this thing end? And I think Americans are entitled to know what the policy is going to be and understand that they'll have a debate about it,
Fair. And that's fair, Senator, certainly with these meetings. And if the former president does get back in the office and does that, people are going to go lose their minds. But Chris Wright, I would say this, that when the current president, Biden, came into office, he kind of undid all the stuff that Trump did with not just with energy, but with immigration and a lot of different things. Some people on the other side have lost their minds. Right. To Senator Heitkamp's point, how important is it for you to have some level of consistency and not some dramatic climate energy, environmental rule changes every 4 years?
Yeah, of course, Brian, uncertainty chills investment. And by the way, great to be here with you and the senator from the great state of North Dakota. Look, my simple view is Biden is good for our industry in the short run because his policies to get in the way, make it more expensive and riskier to produce oil and gas have slowed the growth of American production. We're still growing, but it's slowed the growth. Incrementally, that means higher prices, higher profits for my company and our industry. Absolutely, Biden is a boost in the short run, but in the long run, his pathway is the pathway of Europe, which is ultimately to shrink American production offshore to other countries. Nothing he's doing is reducing demand, but ultimately it would lead to higher prices and more production outside of the United States. Yeah. So in the long run, Biden would be bad for our industry.
Well, I could, Chris, I'll come back to you because I guarantee you there are people watching that support the former president that will say, and they're like throwing tomatoes at the TV right now because they're saying, dang it, Sully, we're at record production because of things that we started 5 years ago, like because it takes time to ramp up. Probably some of that is accurate. It's not like you move overnight, but at the same time, we're at 13.1 or 2 million barrels a day, Chris, aren't we? We've never produced more oil than any country in the history of time.
That is correct. But you're right, Brian. That's in spite of the Biden policies, not because of them. Of course, it would have been higher without the Biden restrictions. It's record natural gas production, record natural gas liquids. That's technology, and that's production mostly on private lands.
Senator, if I can comment. Yeah, I mean, please. I just want to say this is about supply demand. Everybody wants to say it's about the government. Guess what? It's about how much oil we're going to consume and who is the lowest cost producer. And one thing we found out is as the Saudis drove oil prices down, the shale industry struggled very hard to make ends meet. And so a lot of this is about competition. A lot of this is about how do we basically continue a right-sized trajectory. But I do not agree that a lot of federal policy has driven this investment. It's about whether you can make money.
Well, it's weird, Senator. Listen, Senator Heitkamp, you're a Democrat, but you're from North Dakota, so you're not afraid to stand up in front of your people if you're rerunning again, and you would say, you know, we're at record production and go North Dakota, go. You can say that in North Dakota. I don't think the president is going to be putting out TV ads highlighting the record oil production in America. So it's like a hard story for him to tell because he's trapped by what he said and what's actually happening.
Yeah. Brian, can I just make one point? The single most important positive initiative for the oil industry was opening up oil exports. Guess who signed that bill? It was Barack Obama. So let's not just get into this, you know, Democrat Republican thing. People who understand that we need to have affordable, reliable energy in this country need to have a policy that's consistent over the long run. That's going to drive investment. Let's quit putting so much political emphasis on what's happening.
By the way, we'll leave it there, guys. But we showed that XLE ETF, its all-time high was actually in 2014 when a guy named Biden was vice president. There you go. Big oil Biden. Chris Wright and Heidi Heitkamp, thank you very much. All right, coming up, Bill Ackman is cashing in big time and picking stocks has nothing to do with it. We'll tell you what it is next. All right, time for the watch list, because one CEO is up, spinning up an impressive comeback these days. That CEO is DJ Desol, a.k.a. David Solomon of Goldman Sachs. It was a very different tune, though, not that long ago for him. Last summer, the heat was on against Solomon. Questions and speculation about his future at Goldman's helm were rampant. Layoffs, lackluster bonuses, well, at least for them, a consumer banking flop, a stock spinning its wheels, and more, all taking their toll. On top of that, his longtime side gig as a legit DJ was increasingly becoming a source of discontent. I mean, maybe it was his remix of Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody. Yes, that was real, and I thought it was actually really good. But my, what a difference 8 months can make. Today, Goldman stock hit an all-time high, going back to its IPO in 99. Since the peak of last summer's turmoil for Solomon, stock has gained more than 38%. And since he took over in October of 2018, Goldman has more than doubled. How's that for facing the music? In the meantime, from one Wall Street bigwig to another, Bill Ackman's, quote, anti-woke crusade is paying off, because shares of his Amsterdam-listed firm, Pershing Square Holdings, have surged lately. And some feel it has something to do with Ackman's very vocal new stance on X, which has been everything from going after the now ousted president of Harvard to encouraging companies to not hire any college students who are active in violent demonstrations. And Liz Hoffman of Semaphore wrote about it today, a piece all of you should go read. And Liz joins us now, also a CNBC contributor. Liz, thanks for joining us. I actually saw Bill a couple days ago, had a brief chat with him at the Milken conference. And he doesn't show any sign of slowing down on this new platform, does he?
No, I mean, this is, I think he's really unleashed kind of, there's inner politician or social critic. He clearly has a lot to say. And the thing about Twitter is it's a bit of an amen chorus. If you find your people, you get encouraged for saying it. So I think we'll see a lot more Bill on Twitter.
You think, yeah, and you're very, listen, you're right, and I'm not immune to it. Not going to lie. People like your stuff. You're like, ooh, they like me. They really like me. That was Sally Field, because I'm in Hollywood right now. It was a bad version. But I don't think, does Bill Ackman need that? I mean, he's a billionaire. He's you know, he's got all the world at his fingertips. You think he wants that sort of positive feedback?
Yeah. I mean, I think he has a lot of money. And, you know, most people who are that rich don't need more. And in fact, you know, he said during this, you know, campaign over the last couple months that he's doing it because he is financially secure, because he can afford to face the consequences. And that's why the story is so funny, because, you know, he thought, and frankly, I did kind of too, that there might be a price to pay for being that vocal on an issue that hot button, no matter what side of it you're on, just touching it. And it turns out it's been like a huge moneymaker for him.
Well, okay, so let's go to that. What do the smart kids say? Correlation is not causation, or something like that. So I do wonder, Liz, do we know how much of that stock's run-up is related to this, or could it just be other stuff and they just kind of are going together, but they're unrelated?
It could be, and I was careful in the story to say I don't think there's another obvious explanation. You look at other closed-end funds, it hasn't happened. You look at the Amsterdam, it hasn't happened. And this is really, and the chart that you showed, I think, goes back 2 or 3 years. If you go back further, I mean, it's just so, I've never seen a clearer signal of when a stock went up and why.
I mean, you call it the transformation to a right-wing meme stock, Liz. I love your writing. It's leading Semaphore. Go there right now. But do you really think it has a right-wing meme stock?
Look, the way these things work, and it's a closed-end fund, your audience knows this, it's a pile of stocks, which means that it should trade every day at the value of the stocks that it holds, minus some fees.
That's it.
And Pershing Square Holdings has traded at steep discounts for years, 30, 35%. And there's really no explanation for it other than probably a referendum on the manager. Again, these are just stocks. And the whole point of this thing was that the idea was that you could have Bill Ackman pick your stocks and that was valuable. And it didn't seem to be working. They've tried a million things over the years, by the way, to close that discount. They started a dividend. They joined the FTSE 100. They did huge buybacks. And it turns out that all he had to do was start talking.
It's amazing. And please stay on the correlation, Liz. We want to see if this continues, because it is fascinating to watch. Liz Hoffman of Semaphore is up there leading their website. Liz, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. You're very welcome. Let's get now to our quicker than the ticker, all the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. The millionaire capital of the world? It's New York. It has more millionaires than any other city, according to a new study. 350,000 people have liquid, investable wealth above $1 million. That's about one out of every 24 residents. High interest bidding on a napkin, but not just any napkin. This napkin contains the written promise from December of the year 2000 to sign a then 13-year-old Lionel Messi to soccer team FC Barcelona. It's expected to sell for $500,000. Messi helped Barca win 35 titles. Say it ain't so, another sriracha shortage. Hoi Fong Foods, maker of the iconic spicy chili sauce, halting production. Peppers are too green. One ring to rule them all. Warner Brothers announcing new Lord of the Rings movies are in development. CEO David Zaslav says they should be out in 2026. Look at this, a black bear roaming around Washington, D.C. It was spotted in the Brookland neighborhood yesterday. The Human Rescue Alliance says field teams are checking that the bear is safe away from the public. All right, coming up, a cashier taking your restaurant order from the Philippines. It is happening. We'll show it to you, and it could be coming to a restaurant near you. You gotta see it to believe it, and it's next.
All right, welcome back. I want to give you an update on a story that we brought to you last night. Mackenzie Sagalos is back with more on the FTX saga. Mac.
So, Brian, we have some additional context from FTX and the bankruptcy team about their plan to make customers whole. A statement given to CNBC tonight by FTX CEO John Ray says FTX filed a consensus-based plan of reorganization under the supervision of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court that contemplates the return of 100% of bankruptcy claim amounts plus interest for non-governmental creditors. Now, there have been questions about why FTX customers aren't able to benefit from the 300% jump in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. John Ray's statement answers that, saying FTX.com had a massive shortfall at the time of the Chapter 11 filing in November 2022, holding only 0.1% of Bitcoin and only 1.2% of the Ethereum that customers believed that the exchange held. We cannot give tokens back that we never had. As required by bankruptcy law, the plan allocates value among competing claims based on the value of each creditor's claim at the petition date. Now, former FTX CEO Sam Bankman-Fried was found guilty last year of running a fraudulent exchange with Ponzi-like economics. He was sentenced to 25 years. Equity stakeholders of FTX, including Bankman-Fried himself and other high-profile investors, were all wiped out. There's no recourse for them. They took a risk, and it didn't work out. As for where the upwards of $16.3 billion raised by FTX CEO John Ray is going, now some of that goes to legal fees, some to the IRS, some to the Justice Department, and for other settlements. There's a hearing in June to consider the proposal, and if approved, customers should see their money within a few months. FTX says it is, quote, proposing to give all the value we can to creditors equally. That's
all right, Mackenzie. There you go. Mackenzie Sagalos, thank you very much. In the meantime, an exclusive look at one of the leading solutions in the fight to slow global warming. It's called carbon capture technology. It's fascinating. And Diane Olick went all the way to Reykjavik, Iceland, where the world's largest carbon removal plant just switched on. And she joins us now.
Hey, Brian. So this direct air capture plant is sucking carbon out of the atmosphere at a record pace. So-called Mammoth is the newest and largest direct air capture plant in the world from Zurich-based Climeworks. It's about 10 times the size of its previous model. The first section is now operational, and the whole thing will be complete by the end of this year, eventually removing roughly 30,000 tons of carbon per year, or the annual emissions of about 7,000 gas-powered cars. So how it works is huge fans pull air into containers where steam is used to separate out the carbon dioxide. That CO2 is then pumped into water, kind of like a giant soda stream, and piped into the ground where it eventually becomes rock. And this is just the beginning.
This will be a $1 trillion industry if we are serious about it. Just do the maths. If we want to capture billions of tons of CO2 from the atmosphere, then we'll end up in the end with trillions of dollars of market volume.
Climeworks just entered the U.S. market thanks to $500 million from the Department of Energy. It's one of 78 companies in the U.S. direct air capture space, from small startups to names like ExxonMobil. And Climeworks' client roster is wide. These companies are purchasing carbon removal at about $1,000 per ton. Now, the expectation is that that will drop to around $300 per ton eventually. Mammoth has already sold one-third of its capacity before it's even fully finished. Congress appropriated $3.5 billion for regional DAC hubs in the U.S. through the infrastructure law, but millions more are coming from funds like the XPRIZE, Bill Gates' Breakthrough Energy, Lower Carbon Capital, and the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. Brian?
Diana Olick, Reykjavik, Iceland. Wow, cool stuff. Thank you, Diana. All right, coming up, taking your food order from the other side of the world, the way you check out may soon change for good. You have got to see this. Next. All right, now to what may be the coolest or at least most unique story of the day. Now, you know that many restaurants and small businesses are dealing with high labor costs. In New York City, minimum wage $16 an hour. Here in LA, many food workers make $20 or more dollars per hour, and some owners simply can't find workers at any price. But one company is looking to go a long way to solve that problem. I mean, go a really long way. Happy Cashier is a company that outsources some restaurant jobs to other countries. Look at this. It's a real person on video on the other side of the world helping somebody check out in New York City. Is this coming to a fast food joint or a small business near you? Joining us now is Happy Cashier founder Chi Jung. This is fascinating. Thank you for joining us. I know it's only in a couple of New York City places as a test run. How's it going so far?
Hi, Brian. Very excited to be on the show. We've been testing in a few dozen restaurants in New York, and it's so far it's been very successful. So from all our piloting customers, so we do help them save some time and energy operating the restaurant so far.
I have a deviant brain. I apologize. So my thought initially was, how do you prevent people from stealing or taking stuff if it's not a real person?
We use a very advanced technology. Actually, we partner with one of the very top POA system in the US, and all our cashier is logging into a very secure portal to handle the cash activity for our customers.
Yeah, and you're right now, I think the workers that you're using are in the Philippines, right? So no language barrier or issue there. How have the test runs been going in New York? What issues have you encountered so far that you're working to tweak or make better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've been encountered different issues since launch, from culture barrier to try to let people understand this service. Actually, Happy Cashier is not meant to replace any laborers, to provide assistance to small business owners. So myself is coming from owning multiple restaurants. I work 120 hours from Monday to Sunday, and I hope there's a service to help those restaurant owners. If someone call out, if he or she need to hire some additional workers, do some marketing service, reply to Google Yelp reviews, our workers can be of any help to those restaurant owners.
Yeah, truly, truly remarkable stuff. Happy Cashier. We're going to try to find where you are and maybe go into one of those places or stores in New York City and get a taste of it in person ourselves. Chi Jung, really appreciate you coming on the show, and fascinating idea and company. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We'll be next month, we'll be launching in the restaurant show in Chicago on May 18th. I'm looking forward to greeting people there in Chicago. Thank you.
May 18th, Saturday, May 18th in Chicago. You're going to get a lot of buzz there, I think. Very much.
I think I show 2024, yes. Thank you, Brian.
Xi Zhang, happy cashier, happy anchor. All right. Do you know what happened 110 years ago today? President Woodrow Wilson issued a proclamation creating, yes, Mother's Day. Now, since then, Mother's Day has not only become a national treasure, like our mothers, but a major business. According to a survey from the National Retail Federation, Mother's Day spending is expected to reach a near record $33.5 billion this year. On average, all of you nice people out there plan to spend $254 on gifts, celebrations, jewelry, dinners, whatever it might be. As with previous years, the most popular gifts this year will be flowers, greeting cards, and special outings like dinner or a brunch. And I know Mother's Day is Sunday, but because I love my mom that much, it's Thursday, and this is the anniversary of Mother's Day. I want to wish my mom a happy Mother's Day. Mom, tomorrow I'm going to go film the first house that you and Dad bought in Torrance, California on 191st Street. I'll send you a picture. I love you. See you tomorrow.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.